Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, this week on CarCast, we're going to have our buddy Alistair Weaver back on the show from Edmunds.com. He's going to talk about sort of the end of year results, the top cars that they have in their category. So excited about getting into that. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Dodge. We all know that Dodge means horsepower and muscle, but did you know that J.D. Power has ranked Dodge number one for initial quality? J.D. Power also named Dodge the automotive company with the best driver appeal for mass market brands. So they got number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. It's the first time a domestic automotive brand ran away with both awards in the same year. And with enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder these guys are doing it. There's never been a better time now to join the Brotherhood of Muscle. So see your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. Bill Goldberg is not here today. We're going to miss the big guy, but he's off filming. I don't know if it's a secret. I think he's doing another episode of the Goldbergs. And I said, "Hey man, how's it going over there at the Goldbergs?" And he sent me a note back, and he said, "Let me find it here. I know I got it in my email somewhere."
At least you've come prepared, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got it. I said, how is it to be back on the set? And how's the show? Because it's a great comedy. And he's like, "Well, my first line today was, 'Eat my sack.'" So I don't know what they're trying to do, what they're trying to put him in, what they're setting him up for, but it sounds like he's going to have some fun. But unfortunately, we kind of knew, as we teased last week, that he was going to be doing that, and he wasn't sure when his call time was going to be, but it's now. So we've got our buddy Alistair Weaver back in. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Matt. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Been driving a lot of cars. You as well. We did Mach-E, and then I had this sort of McLaren week because I got a little jealous of your 765 reports. So I drove the McLaren GT, the 765, and the Senna.
And that was a tough week then, basically.
That was a lovely week last week. And then now I'm back to driving the truck. Before we get started, a little update on the truck. As you guys saw some of my Instagram posts, we cracked into the new engine. So I've got that new Dart 427 engine that's going into it. It's all aluminum, which is going to be a huge weight savings, should significantly increase the performance, not just horsepower, obviously, but the weight savings between going from that 351 iron block, iron heads to aluminum block, aluminum heads. Block weighs like 93 pounds, which has got to be like 100 or so less than the iron block. So I'm starting to build that. That's going to be fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. I'll post more images of it. But we got some interesting stuff from Edmunds. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Dodge. We all know that Dodge means horsepower and muscle. And now Dodge has been ranked number one for initial quality by J.D. Power. And J.D. Power has also named them the best driver appeal for mass market brands. So there's never been a better time now to join the Brotherhood of Muscle. See your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com. All right, Alistair, end of the year. All the fun stuff you've been doing, all the reviews, it's coming to a head, and here we are. You guys are getting ready to announce all of the best of the best. what you guys love the most, what people should buy, right?
Right. You sound like, I didn't know whether you're trying to do your Michael Buffer impression there.
Right. No, this is exciting. Everybody does kind of their end of the year list and kind of who won and just sort of what your thoughts on are, what are the best cars and SUVs and stuff. So why don't you start a little bit about, I guess, what it takes to become the best, you know, for the year, and how does that apply? Because, you know, if you say something like, you know, for example, everything that has to be on the list has to be new for the year. There's not like a carryover.
No, that's the big distinction for us. So we took the view, I mean, you're right, there are plenty of awards out there, but we wanted to do something different and actually really represent excellence. And one of the challenges is if you just announce a winner of the best car that happened come out this year, if you're not careful, you sort of twist yourself up in knots, because really it's all dependent on what's new. So you might end up awarding a vehicle that actually isn't the best in its class. And actually that happens a lot with awards programs that run in that way. So what we've said is somewhat different. What we're saying is we divided the market up into 8 categories: SUVs, trucks, EVs, sports cars, and basically said, these are the best vehicles you can buy today, period, irrespective of when they were launched. So that means that we can and we do have repeat winners. But it also means that you don't end up in a world where you say, you know, the Corvette was new last year, for example, where we don't give it to another sports car that simply came out this year, but in our opinion is less able than the C8, for example. So we think as a consumer orientated site, we think that makes a lot more sense. We're actually just rewarding the best of the best, as you said.
Okay. Where do you want to start? Let's go through some of it. Tell us what's going on. You sent me a glimpse of the list, and you're right. There's some vehicles on there that are considered the best, but they've been out for a little while. But also that probably means they've worked out some bugs along the way. That's the other thing, is you get a new vehicle out and you're like, this is probably the best new vehicle, but not the best in the category yet.
Yeah, and what where we are with it basically is if I look at the list, we've got 3 repeat winners and are out of the 8 categories. So the Kia Telluride's a repeat winner. I mean, Kia's just done an incredible job for the money with that vehicle. Mercedes-Benz GLE, there's simply no luxury SUV that came out that topped it this year. And frankly, Mercedes is leading the way. We love the Defender, and obviously that was a contender. But the GLE is just such a great all-round package. Corvette won again. Base entry-level 911 came out this year, and that was, you know, that was hugely impressive. But, you know, for the money, for what it delivers for the money, the Corvette's the obvious choice. And then in the normal EV class, Tesla Model 3 won again. I mean, it's actually had a price reduction this year, and it's about to have some subtle upgrades. And, you know, it's just a great all-rounder. So what's new, I guess, is the bigger day. Should we start with one of the more controversial ones? So
yeah, because I already have questions.
Yeah, yeah, I know, and we introduced for the first time this year a luxury EV category. So last year we had 7 categories. This year we've got 8, and that's just really reflecting the changes in the market, that the market's growing really fast. And we looked at it and said, well, actually, we need to set the barrier somewhere. And a lot of the time we look at luxury in terms of branding and pitch and that kind of thing. But in the EV space, you said, right, the average transaction price is around $40,000 at the moment, just under. So we said, okay, $40,000 is our cutoff. So that's a starting MSRP. So really the choice, for full transparency, the choice came down to 2 cars, the Taycan and the Mustang Mach-E. And we managed to get a Mustang Mach-E for full testing, put it through our test track, put it through our EV range loop, just before we had to make the final decision. And we were really impressed with it. And, you know, we're getting a little bit of, oh, is it a luxury vehicle? Is it not? Well, you know, the sweet spot of the range is in the mid $50,000. It's all right. The vehicle we had on test is $56,000. And when you think that its rivals are the Polestar 2 and the Tesla Model Y, then clearly it sits in that company. So we think it's absolutely a worthy winner of the luxury tag. And it's strange. Yesterday, I was getting vilified on Twitter for describing a $56,000 car as reasonably affordable. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, being vilified on Twitter for saying that it's a luxury vehicle. So it's like, I mean, it's the same price as a Macan. So it's a weird world out there. I'll come on to some other Twitter abuse in a minute, but that was the that was the thrust of yesterday.
Yeah. So I was my questions were, and you answered them, were the thresholds of what defines luxury. It's not really about brand so much as you guys needed to make a price point determination for it. But
in that EV class, and I think going forwards, we may well, you know, as the market develops, we may have to evolve our thinking. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough across the market. You can get an $80,000 F-150. You know, is that a luxury vehicle? But we have to draw the line somewhere, and we feel 100% confident about our choice.
And the Tesla Model 3, you said, was the winner of the non-luxury EV. But what is the average price of a Model 3?
Well, we've actually been reasonably specific in, generally speaking, the awards are for the model rather than a variant. But I think we've always been pretty explicit with the Model 3 that we believe the standard range plus is, you know, the best all-round buy. And that's $37,000. And yes, you can go up to the performance and everything else, but the heart of that range is $37,000. That's the one that sells, and our opinion, you know, it's the one I own. And frankly, it's all you need, really.
Okay, so the Model 3 does come pretty well equipped for under $40,000 when you're done. Whereas the Mustang Mach-E that we learned basically starts at about $40,000 and kind of goes up
43,
there.
I think, yeah. And 43, 44, but you're probably spending into the 50s to get, like, you know, the long range with the all-wheel drive and that sort of thing.
And that's before we get into a GT model, which they haven't released yet. That's going to be maybe another 8 or 9 months away, and their GT performance. So the range is going to be somewhere from 43 to probably 70,000.
Yes. And at the moment, they get a federal tax credit simply because they haven't sold that many EVs. So at the moment, you can get $7,500 off through your tax return. But that will run out probably within the next year. So for those who don't know this, it was to incentivize manufacturers to make EVs, and you got a $7,500 grant, basically, up to a certain number of EVs sold, which Tesla passed ages ago. So did GM, Nissan. But Ford hasn't because it's late to the market. So they have this kind of advantage. It's a weird thing because it's kind of a late mover advantage. But whatever the philosophy behind it, it's a clear bonus for the next year.
Right. Well, yeah, that ultimately for the customer, because anybody that wasn't on the EV bandwagon initially and that didn't take advantage of those grants, if you will, can sort of start that over with Ford. Anyway, thoughts on the Mustang Mach-E now that you guys put it on your test track? I bring it up just because I drove it this week as well. And I read one review out there where, I don't know, it seems like most people have a pretty good idea of what it is that Ford's doing with it and similar thoughts on the vehicle. And then I don't remember who wrote it. I think it was up on TechCrunch. And I'm not saying this is a TechCrunch thing. It just could be whoever is contributing the car reviews. That dude, like, absolutely hated it. And I read the review and I was like, I don't know if the one you're driving was broken or you're on terrible roads or do you know anything about testing cars or just, I don't know, but maybe they just
want to be contrary.
I guess so. I mean, it wasn't here in LA. It wasn't part of the, I think they just got access to one of them through Ford in Michigan. And I don't know if it was, you know, when it happened or what the situation was around it, but just a lot of things that they talked about as far as ride quality and stuff wasn't reflected in what I experience with the vehicle and most people throughout the day that I interacted with. But anyway, you guys hit the test track. I could give my opinion on it, and I could say that I like it and whatnot, but you guys put it on the test track and obviously gave it an award. But tell us about it. What are your thoughts on the Mach-E?
So it was a long, I mean, when you think about the journey this car's been on, I mean, I went to, as I, on our YouTube channel at the moment, or indeed on our site, there's the film I actually presented about the Mach-E, and it's a sort of 10-minute first drive. You know, it was a year ago that I went to Detroit to look at it in a studio, and then it got delayed and delayed by the pandemic, but it's finally arriving now. And we had an early car which managed to put through our test process. It's a good thing. I mean, there's a few little things in the software and things like that, which they're probably going to improve with over-the-air updates. The braking performance in terms of the way the pedal feels and that sort of thing is a little bit odd. But to be honest, you drive it as a one-pedal car, by which I mean when you lift off the throttle, it brings in regenerative braking, so you rarely touch the brakes. I think they've done a really good job. I think they've obviously had the Teslas as a bit of a benchmark. And they've taken what Tesla does well and then reintroduce a little bit of old world stuff like proper switches for air vents and glove boxes that open on a handle, which, you know, you can't, everybody says, oh, that's old school. But actually, I quite like moving the air vent with a plastic switch instead of having to dig into menus. And the main thing is it drives well. It really does drive well on the track. I mean, you know, how many people are going to slide it around, but you can, it's actually really adjustable. You know, it feels, I'd say it feels like a Mustang. It's not a rear drive coupe, but it is quite adjustable. And because in the model that we drove, which is, it's going to be different in the GT. In the GT, both motors are going to be the same size, but in the long range premium that we had, the motor at the rear is actually bigger. And the way the software is set up, it feels more like a rear wheel drive car than an all wheel drive car. You actually, if you lift off the throttle, there's quite a lot of adjustability. You can tuck the nose in, it'll move around a little bit. It's really fun to drive. And unlike the Tesla, they've managed to combine that with a decent ride quality. I mean, we have the Model Y performance, which is kind of at the extreme, but the ride quality is abysmal. Whereas in the Mustang, it feels fairly sporting, but it's a much more comfortable everyday car. So there's so much to like about it. There's not quite as much space or as much trunk capacity as there is in a Tesla, but it's still pretty spacious inside. The software, I like the way the interface works. You've got things like Apple CarPlay that you don't in the Tesla. You know, I think they've done a really good job. And the whole thing was developed by a small team within Ford, what we call Team Edison. It wasn't developed by, you know, the kind of big corporate machine. And I think you can tell it feels like a bit like Ford's performance products are, you know, They're developed by a small team, hugely committed. Not that everybody else in the company isn't, but it's a slightly different ethos. They're given a bit more license to try stuff and experiment. And, you know, I think they've done a terrific job.
What are your thoughts on Ford being able to kind of nail this on the first try? Now, understandably, almost every car that comes out and it's a ground up, you know, clean sheet design, even Corvette C8, it gets out there. And then once, you know, 10,000 people are driving it, they start to see these flaws start to pop up and this needs to be fixed or this is a recall or this is whatever. This is so groundbreaking for somebody like Ford. You know, this group that you're talking about that's developing EVs for Ford, although it's sort of a small group, but it's a very well funded group. It's an $11.5 billion budget group, and they have like Transit EV vans, and they have this, you know, the Mach-E, and they're going to getting into the SUV market. But what are the chances that this is going to be? I don't know that anything's flawless, but as close to working the way it should from the starting line.
Well, you're quite right that it is sort of a bold new territory. And the big difference, Ford has made EVs before. They did the electric Focus, but even by their own admission, that was basically taking a Focus and taking the engine out and dropping a motor in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like what they're doing with classic cars today. But this is totally different. This is a ground up electric car. Which is really interesting. And it seems amazing to me that even 2 or 3 years ago, before they started the Mustang, they weren't going to do this. I mean, just extraordinary. Then they had a change of CEO and suddenly they decided to commit to it. the big thing in its favor is that there's over-the-air software updates. And we're seeing this on pretty much, I think, every significant new model that comes out in the next 2 or 3 years is going to have over-the-air updates. And these things are so controlled by software. And I don't just mean CarPlay and, you know, that the hi-fi. I mean, you know, the braking performance, the range. I mean, we've seen this from Tesla, that they can fire out a download and suddenly you've got a bit more power, or you've got a bit more range, or you've got a new game within the touchscreen. Mm-hmm. So Ford's really going to make hay with this. And what it does give you is a bit more license. So instead of everything having to be a recall or trip to the dealer, you know, you can fire out an update and correct things on the fly. So I think that will make a difference. I think the other thing is, it is Ford's first crack at this, proper crack at this, but it's not necessarily the supplier's first crack at this. You know, and you have to remember that what manufacturers do is really, manufacturers design and assemble vehicles, and what then they work with suppliers to actually build them and, you know, provide them. So, you know, it's often something that's missed. They don't build anything as such. They assemble stuff. So, you know, the batteries, the tires, all those, the brakes, all those bits and pieces are, you know, from proven suppliers who've got plenty of experience.
Now, you've been here on the show many times in the past and said your thought is still to lease an EV instead of buying it. Are you still on board with that?
I am. The way Ford does it is a little bit different. The way they do it through like their own internal scheme, which isn't always, because it makes it slightly more complicated in getting the grant back. I don't know whether actually they're going to change that, but that was how they set it up originally. So that's one mark against the Mach-E, really. But I am, just because I think the technology moves on so fast. I mean, even from my personal experience, I had I first arrived in LA, released a BMW i3 for my wife. And, you know, 2 years later, at the end of the lease, BMW put that straight out to auction. And I had a conversation with them at the dealership. And I said, you know, are you going to put it on the forecourt? Are you going to try and retail it? And they're just like, nobody wants it. It's got 130-mile range. You know, the world's moved on. It goes straight to auction and straight into the system. So, you know, the technology is evolving so fast. I would say, you know, lease it for 2-3 years, maybe 3 years is some of the better deals. And by which time, there'll be a whole new world of tech.
How does the tax credit work on the lease?
So if you get a lease, so like, for example, when we got the BMW at the time, BMW could still claim these things. And so it's just built into the lease. It's baked into the lease. My understanding is with Ford, the way Ford is running it through their own kind of pseudo-leasing situation is that you have to claim it back on your tax return at the end of the year. So you don't instantly get the money off. You actually have to claim it back through your tax return, which is an extra layer of hassle. And of course, you've got to cash flow that period. So, you know, the simplest way of buying an electric car with the federal tax credit is just to lease it and bake the tax credit into the lease. And then you're done.
Right. Okay. Well,
because basically, to cut a long story short, Matt, if the lease was $500 and you get $7,500 tax credit, which the dealer deals with, then suddenly your lease is, you know, $470 or something, or whatever it may be.
Right. Okay. I agree that the over-the-air updates for something like this is going to be absolutely mandatory for all the car companies that are able to do this. This is going to end up going, listen, Corvette C8 has over-the-air updates for many of its things, and it's not an EV. We need to start to get into that realm. Not to mention, you know, we keep saying over-the-air updates in the terms of fixing a vehicle or something along those lines. But this is really a way for the car companies to make some extra money. Over-the-air updates could also be, and in the case of Ford, is going to be, and I assume Tesla as well, it's going to be add-ons and upgrades and things like that. Like maybe you couldn't buy the performance model at the time, and, you know, a year into owning the car, you want added performance, and there's probably going to be something on your touchscreen or your iPhone you're going to log into your account and go, hey, you know, for $1,200, I can get this performance upgrade and just hit the button and it's downloaded. You know, it's just, you know, or like you said, or range or something. And I would imagine at some point, maybe even temporary things, you know, kind of like renting a movie, you know, downloading a rental movie where you'd be like, hey, I'm going on a road trip. I don't need all the performance. I want some extra range. Maybe there's a, you know, for $49, I can download the temporary range extender, you know.
Details, the performance. There's all sorts of, it's like an iPhone, isn't it? You know, you need a surf report or something, and then you just pay your $4 and you get a new app.
Yeah, there's going to be a version of that. Of course, I mean, in the world of Bronco and Mustang and Tesla and stuff, the app's probably going to be like, buy the T-shirt and the hat and the swag and stuff that you want. But there's going to be ways to buy things. Now, one of the things on Mach-E that I thought was interesting, impressive, was instead of trying to go out there and run out and build their entire network like Tesla has attempted to do for charging, they went to all of the charging companies that are pretty much out there. There's two big ones, I guess, and that they really like. And they said, well, you know, you get the little scan card, a barcode, and you each charging station, you scan your card and how much money do you have in your account and do you need to load up extra money and you could charge. And now it's all in the Ford app that's on your phone. So when you're driving your Mach-E, you can subscribe to all of those charging stations and then just basically just use your Ford app, and it's all one account, one billing, you know, one barcode, and you can go to anywhere and charge it for, you know, for the non-free public stations, you know, the ones that you have to roll up again. So I thought that was kind of an interesting idea to get that support from those various companies.
It is a good idea to sort of consolidate it. Having said that, I think there's about 13,000 charging points that the Mach-E can use across the US. But having said that, Tesla's supercharger network at the moment is still more comprehensive. And that is still a plus point for Tesla. There's no question about it. Their fast charging network is more comprehensive. It's more bespoke to the Teslas. You know, I think that's a big part of why their market value is so high, because they have a lot of that infrastructure in place and it's growing all the time. But you're right. You know, it's only going to get better. But if you think about it, in the Mach-E's case, every other electric car from every other brand bar Tesla is going to be using the same chargers, whereas Tesla's just dedicated to Tesla.
Yeah, and you're right.
And actually, a Tesla can use the other chargers as well.
Yeah, you're right. I do think that contributes significantly to the value of Tesla's company and to their stock, because they've done such a good job doing it. And then, you know, and then how they power it up and solar power and all the other things, because there's a whole nother argument as to when you're plugging it in, where's that power coming from? And is it any cleaner than driving a gas engine car? That's probably a conversation for another time. But interesting thoughts on Mach-E. Some of the other vehicles that you mentioned, Kia Telluride, which I have not driven yet. I'm not sure why. I have to reach out to Kia. There's the new SUV. What's the Kia luxury brand? The partner there, is it Genesis?
Well, Kia. Yeah, I mean, Kia's part of the same group as Hyundai and Genesis. So GV80 would actually come into the luxury class against GLE, Mercedes GLE, which won that. But Telluride's it's one of these vehicles. It just comes along now and again where they just knock it out of the park. And you know, it's huge. It's super spacious. We have one on our long-term test program. It's super spacious. It's comfortable. It's refined. I mean, to put it into context, I went up to Mammoth for Thanksgiving, and I had the choice of basically taking an X5 or a Telluride. And in the end, I took the Telluride. And you know, it's crazy. You know, in days gone by, you would never have thought of that choice. And yes, the X5's $80,000, and I'll tell you, right, even in top spec, is about $50,000. It's just a great vehicle. I think it's one of the best looking SUVs out there. The interior quality is good. It rides well. It drives well. Yeah, I mean, I think they've knocked out. And actually, what's interesting is it continues to sell. I mean, there was a significant period of time, and I think it's still the case, where a Kia was going over MSRP. I know dealers charging a premium is a massive pet hate of yours.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a Mercedes Black Series, okay. But on a Kia Telluride, I mean, even the guys at Kia could barely believe it.
Yeah. Suckers. What's the Genesis SUV? Because you mentioned a good-looking vehicle. It was just announced in the past couple of months. I'm not sure where it's the beautiful red. Is it GV70?
Yeah, GV70. There's the GV80, which is kind of like Mercedes GLE big. And then GV70 is kind of GLC big.
But it's announced and not really out yet, right? That's the one I'm thinking.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, correct. But it's a pretty little thing. I mean, I think Genesis is on a real roll. It looks good. The interior is nice. Yeah, I mean, it's a potential contender for next year for sure.
You know, the grill is like a little funky, but the lines on that thing are really nice. The back end of it and the profile of that SUV is gorgeous. How much of that is Telluride?
Almost none of it. Telluride's a lot bigger. I mean, there'll probably be a few common components, but you know, Telluride's massive. Telluride is kind of like GLE big, whereas you know, Telluride's a big three row SUV, and the footprint is practically probably even bigger than the GLE in terms of the footprint. Whereas the GV70 is more like Mercedes GLC big, so it's a sort of luxury compact.
Well, what about the difference between like Kia and then Hyundai and then Genesis or the Kia and the Genesis? I guess what I'm getting at is I've heard so many good things about Telluride, but did they just get lucky on it? Did Telluride just work because the pieces fell together and it worked? Or is this the sign of good things for Kia? And then when you get to Genesis, is Genesis saying, hey, I like the Telluride, but I want the nicer version, and it's going to work better. It's going to be nicer, but still work. Is the success of Telluride a fluke, or is that something we can expect and upscale to the Genesis brand?
Well, interesting. Of course, if I look at our winners, it wasn't just the Telluride. Kia also won with the K5 sedan, which is a rival to the Honda Accord. And what they've successfully done is take what they did well with the Telluride and apply it to the K5. Now, what's interesting, what Kia Hyundai as a company did, all started years ago. They hired a guy called Peter Schreyer from Audi, who was a designer, and he started to institute really great design, then went on to run the company. At the moment, they just brought back a guy called Luke Donkervolker, who was, I think it was a Murcielago he designed for Lamborghini. And what they've done, and then they brought in the chassis chief from BMW. And so what they've basically done as a company is go around the world and handpick some of the best people in the global industry
from luxury brands,
and then empower them to do a job on Kia, on Hyundai, on Genesis. And you know, some of Hyundai's, Hyundai's design is also now getting more and more adventurous. But Kia seem to have just hit their sweet spot in terms of the pitch of the brand is still seen as value. The quality is good, but they're executing some really great cars. Genesis had a bit of a slow start, but they were all really about sedans initially, and the market was moving to SUVs. It's a big year for them. GV80 looks good. GV70 looks good. You know, and suddenly it's not rocket science, really. You look at the people behind it and you say, well, if you've brought in a chassis supremo who's developed a bunch of fantastic vehicles, as long as he's got a decent team around him, why couldn't he execute it for Kia? Same with the design. You know, as long as there's a good strength in depth in the organization, why shouldn't you achieve success? So, you know, it's a bit like somebody starting a new NFL franchise and having the money to go around the teams and handpick, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get Brady from here, and then we'll get here and put it all together.
Is it really translating into sales for them as well?
Yeah, I mean they're doing I tell you right, it's been a huge hit. You know, K5, it'd be interesting to see how well that does, because the saloon market is not what it once was, but you know, it's still big numbers, hundreds and millions a year sold. So Yeah, it's you know, they're even talking about, I mean, new F-150 when our Edmunds talk right a truck, but you know, there's talk of Hyundai and Kia getting into truck market as well. So, you know, there's a lot going on. It's interesting times.
Kia,
what's
getting
interesting, Matt? Sorry, one final thing. We were sitting down and cut you off. I was getting excited for a moment. One of the things we actually sat down and realized is, when you look, we got two Mercedes, two Kias, a Tesla and two Fords, two Mercedes, two Kias, a Tesla and a Chevy. No Japanese brand.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Which is the first time, I think, probably ever in these sort of things, that there's no Honda, there's no Toyota, it's
no Lexus.
It's interesting.
You know, and Lexus is kind of a benchmark for quality, reliability, quality for sure.
And we don't think about it in those terms. We just judge it per sector. But yeah, it's interesting. Sorry.
No BMWs on the list, and something like a 3 Series has always been a staple at the top of those lists. Always been a benchmark for car companies to say, we want a 3 Series fighter.
You're right. Yeah. And actually, you know, somebody's just saying something on YouTube commentary, you know, YouTube comments on these awards. It's part of the fun of awards, isn't it? Getting all the debate going. Yeah, if you were to say, what about BMW? And, you know, the X5 is, I'm a big fan of the X5. I think the X5 is a really nice vehicle. But the GLE just outpoints it.
X3 has been very successful. X3 has been raved about.
X3 again is good. We prefer the GLC, but X3 is a good thing. 3 Series, we were a bit disappointed with. I mean, to be honest, the world's kind of moved on a little bit. You know, I grew up with things like the E33 Series and things like that. But, you know, people are buying X3s now. They're not buying 3 Series.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting that I guess I haven't really paid as much attention to Kia or even Hyundai. For some reason, Kia seems to be getting more attention than Hyundai is. Genesis, I've spent some time in, and I was a fan of the vehicles. I thought they were fantastic, and they're, you know, the nice ones are slowly climbing up in price, and certainly doing for their company what the Japanese car manufacturers did when they all launched luxury brands. They kind of had to win people on price, and then slowly be able to increase the price to win them on quality and reputation and all the other attributes. But
and I think that's what Kia's done well in the you know, the more mainstream markets as well. People get into them, and then they like what they, you know, they like what they see, and then they stay with the brand.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. Let me tell you guys about Geico. Maybe you guys own your home or you rent your home. Well, either way, it can be a lot of hard work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because we already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Go get some Geico. Get some insurance. When you go and lease your Mach-E.
I have Geico insurance, Matt. You see, it works. Advertising works.
You were just telling me before, you're like, actually, I just got new insurance. It was Geico. You're like, I'm not sure why I thought of it. It's probably because we say it again and again and again and again and again.
I just figured if I said it loud enough, would I get a discount? But probably not.
That's a, come on, Geico. Well, you already said you bought it. You should have said you were shopping. You were shopping around. Yeah. You're going to go and get your quote in 15 minutes or less. See if they save you 15%. Then they'd be calling and going, you're good. We'll help you out. But they know you're over.
I can still cancel.
All right. So you got videos for all of these things. All of these lists are up at edmunds.com. You guys can check it out there.
Edmunds.com/top-rated.
There you go. Edmunds.com/top-rated.
It's also all over our YouTube channel. There's a little highlights film. Apologies that it's presented by me. But if you can cope with that, then there's like a little 15 minutes wrap-up film which talks you through the whole process.
And, of course, we can reach out to you and debate you on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
We could figure out what's the difference between a luxury car and not a luxury car, although I feel like we've covered it. You opened a can of worms on social media the other day. And I'm sure you're getting into this. You said something about autonomous driving or something that got people excited. They got excited.
Yeah, if I can grab my phone for a moment, I can. So at the moment, I think we've just, where are we? Yeah, we've now passed 96. So Melanie and 96 others liked a tweet you were mentioned in. What an upper-class twit is Alistair Weaver of Edmonds. Ford will beat Tesla to hands-free driving. Tesla is already there, you dullard. Ford isn't even in the game. So there you go.
But it started with what? You were saying Ford's going to be true hands-free driving before Tesla. And then everyone said, you're twit.
I think they must be British. I love the upper class. If you know anything about Britain, I am far from upper class. And I love to use the word twit, which I haven't heard. But it's also because the Mach-E has a system and the hardware's in there and the software's coming next year, which basically allows you to drive hands-free on about 100,000 miles of U.S. highway. You have to keep your eyes looking forward, but you can relax your hands, which, of course, Tesla doesn't do. And I knew it'd be controversial, but it just shows the level of attention we've been. Yeah, and then people have been hunting around through my profile, oh, hang on a minute, he's released a Model 3 for his family. Does that mean he's okay? And then suddenly, the next minute, somebody's back in, no, asshole, and it's off we go again. I don't know. It's part of the game, but sometimes it gets a bit. We're actually doing as a sneak preview over the holiday season. We've done a. Just editing at the moment. We've done a film of where we read out all our mean YouTube comments.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. That would take forever to read all of them. Maybe we could pick a few. Let me ask you about this, for lack of a better term, autonomous driving. I don't believe there's any real autonomous driving right now. But part of the confusion is what's being marketed. What the car companies or the marketing people are telling you is happening, what the feature is versus the reality of the feature. And each car company sort of has their interpretation. Everybody's sort of heading toward the same goal. Let's call autonomous the goal. But it's just various stages of cruise control, effectively, right? It's your foot's off the throttle, fine. Now your hands are, or your eyes are, or shouldn't, and that's kind of what we're talking about. So I think what's happening is one. I think you, as someone who tests and has a team to do this, can explain some of the differences between, let's say, Ford's version, Cadillac's version, Tesla's version, but different than what people think they have, right? Or it's not all the same.
No, and it's not. And there's a lot of nonsense talked about what's actually happening. The Ford systems, it works alongside the GM system, which is basically where on certain highways you can take your hands off the wheel and the car will effectively drive itself, but then it's still monitoring you. So it's level, it's called level 3, but it basically means you have to be in control of the vehicle.
Now, there's several cameras in the car for Ford, for example, that are all looking at you. And if you futz around in the back seat, start looking away, it's not going to do it. It's shutting down, or it's going to yell at you, or it's going to do something.
Yeah, all of those things. Big fist will come out of the dashboard. So it kind of watches you to make sure you keep your eyes on the road. The Tesla system, everybody makes a lot of noise about autopilot. Reality is autopilot is pretty much the same in terms of the way, in terms of what it actually does for you as a driver to, familiar systems from BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, and pretty much everybody else, in that it's a fancy version of automated cruise control, and then it puts steering inputs in to keep you in the lane. But it's not autonomous driving in a true sense. And I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, I was kind of going to big seminars on this stuff, and it was 10 years from now, cars will be driving itself. That's all really reversed. A lot of people have been reversing out of a lot of those predictions pretty quickly. it feels that there's just too many hurdles to overcome. And the way it was put to me is, you know, 99% of the problems are easy to solve, but it's that last 1% that will take 99% of the time. And I think everybody's recognizing that it's a lot more difficult than you think. And maybe on highways and things like that, where you've got a very structured environment, then we will have, you know, hands-free driving reasonably quickly. But I think it's a long time since we get on, whatever Elon Musk say, I think it's a long time since until we get, you know, reliable, safe, driving around city streets.
And even if we get to that point, I don't know that autonomous driving starts, like full autonomous driving starts at the consumer level. It seems like it starts at the commercial level. Like autonomous driving semi trucks seems like, you know, or delivery trucks or maybe even trickle down to some sort of, you know, rideshare Uber kind of thing going on. But in the everyday person version, it's an incredibly complicated thing, and we don't even have the infrastructure to do it. You know, like when you're saying even Ford system has to be on certain roads, certain freeways, certain sort of like, certain events that are happening, you know, for the vehicle to make it work. Well, that caters to, you know, long distance shipping and semi trucks and things like that as well. Like that's where I would see this autonomous driving probably happening first. I can't say for sure because all these companies are developing different things and they're going to go where the money is. But, you know, a company like Waymo, right? Like they're putting a lot of attention into this. This is their entire business model. I haven't been following them too much. I'm not exactly sure where they are with their technology or who they even predict their client to be. But I don't think it's going to be me.
I think, to be honest, for a lot of people, a system that allows you to get on the highway, flick this thing on, and then just sit there in, you know, in nose to tail traffic all day on your commute or something, you know, even as enthusiasts, you and I, I'm sure would be more than happy with that, because, you know, and if you can do a few emails and just take the stress out of the commute, then great. Yeah. And then, you know, you can turn the systems off if you're heading up in the mountains and want to enjoy driving again. So, you know, it's all coming, and the technology is getting better and better all the time. And I remember the early days of, you know, automatic cruise control. And every time you went around a vague corner on a highway, then the thing would speed up because the sensors would lose the car in front and things like that. So it's already got so much better, and it will just gradually evolve. But I really think we're still a long way away from just basically being, you know, a car drives up to your front door, you get in, and then, you know, you drive off again.
Yeah.
And we can't do that anyway because of COVID.
Right now, because of COVID, there's always something holding us back. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. All the good stuff. Looking forward to digging into this top list you guys have again. Before we wrap things up, a word from our friends at Dodge. We talked about Dodge, meaning horsepower and muscle, and they're ranked number one for initial quality by J.D. Power. Well, J.D. Power is also named the automotive company with the best driver appeal for mass market brands as well. So that's number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. It's the first time a domestic automotive brand ran away with both awards in the same year. And with enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder that Dodge is scooping up these awards. There's never been a better time now to join the Brotherhood of Muscle. See your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com for some more information. Do you have a top horsepower award? Is that a category that people are demanding? Ridiculously overstocked on horsepower and understocked on miles per gallon.
We could do like horsepower to traction ratio would be a good one.
Yeah.
In fact, I know we haven't got time to talk about it now, but we launched a film a couple of weeks back of the BMW M8 in a drag race against the GT500.
Yeah.
And that GT500, I love it to bits, but it has real problems with traction. And the M8, check out the video on YouTube, the M8 competition has less horsepower, but it does have all-wheel drive, and just the traction. I've never been in a car that launches like that. just extraordinary how that thing launches.
So the M8 is all-wheel drive. I feel like I knew that and just didn't trigger with me that M8 would be all-wheel
drive. It's an M8, but you can also switch off, a bit like the M5, you can switch off the front. You can switch off the all-wheel drive bit and just leave it in rear-wheel drive for a drag, for either. So we actually tried that for the drag race to level the playing field, but you know, I still won. Just saying.
You were driving the M8 because everybody thought you couldn't drive a GT500 from the previous video.
Yeah. And we're absolutely delighted with me. Carlos Largo did it with me, and I took all this abuse on the last drag race about, you know, I can't drive. So anyway, Carlos can have that for a bit and then it'll be back to me, I'm sure. But the M8, extraordinary. But having said that, the M8, $180,000, which is just nuts.
Oh, 180. The M8.
So it's 100 grand more, literally 100 grand more than GT500.
But now this is Porsche 911 Turbo S money.
Nearly, yeah. Giant Turbo S is probably just over. So it's definitely 911 Turbo money. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I don't think it's worth anywhere near that much, to be honest. Not for what it delivers. I don't think it delivers anything more than a Carrera S does, to be honest. But it's very good at drag racing. So if you have 180 grand and you want a car that's very good for drag racing, then get an M8 competition.
Get an M8 competition. All right.
There's your holiday wishes.
It's funny though, because GT500, I don't care if you guys just beat that thing drag race after drag race. The point is that car is fun. That car just makes noises and it goes all over the place. It slides all over and it is absolutely fun. Same way with like the way all the crazy Dodge, you know, Hellcats and stuff are. They're over the top. They're ridiculous, but they're fun. And when you get into Porsche and you get into BMW, like they have to put all that performance and then the refinement and everything else that needs to be in it. And it's good and it works. But there's something about the version that is not refined that is kind of fun.
I'm absolutely with you. And that's what's wonderful about the GT500 is it is really raw and aggressive, and it struggles for traction off the line, all sorts of things. But actually the handling is really good. And you can slide that thing around with impunity. And so it's this wonderful blend of something that's a bit lunatic, has too much power for its own good, but at the same time is a bit of a pussycat to drive. And the fact that 760 horsepower is so controllable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did the film earlier in the year and I turned all the stability control off and everything, was actually able to drift it around and talk to camera. And I'm not, you know, I don't pretend to be Lewis Hamilton. So, you know, the fact that you can do all that and have so much fun with it, and it's so responsive and so predictable and controllable, I think it's an awesome thing. I really do. You know, it's more, for me, it's more fun than the C8 Corvette, even if the Corvette all round, you'd say, is a better car.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Guys, check out edmunds.com. You can follow Alistair. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter, and he's Weaver on Cars on Instagram. So follow him there and tell him how much you love him. And he needs that this week. he needs that this week. Tell him how much you love him and how much you love him on CarCast. But we always love it when you're on the show. We always appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt, and happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays to you as well. We'll have you back on, and we'll do it again. We'll just do it in January when we're back, and we'll see what's going on, what's new with you guys, and what we have to look for 2021. More cars, more debuts, more fun stuff, more testing, and I'm sure there's going to be some things that we're all going to be excited for in 2021.
Going to the pub.
Yeah, right? Going outside. You moved to California for the tan, and after leaving England, and you can't go outside. You can't do anything. You have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just have half a tan now.
Right? Just on the forehead, not even around the mouth. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana.
For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Guys, thanks for listening. Always appreciate it when Alistair's on the show. Love him. Before we wrap up, a word from our friends at Geico. We talked about it before. You guys may own your home or you rent your home. It could be a lot of work, a lot of stuff going on over there. You know what's easy, though? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just visit geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.